Hello and welcome to the Anorexic and Bulimic Recovery Panel Discussion. My name is Allison. I am a compulsive eater and a bulimic. Hi. Why, the topic of this panel is anorexic and bulimic recovery, and the speakers all have experience in this particular area. This panel is open to everyone. We will introduce ourselves and qualify and speak for 20 minutes on the topic of what it is like to let go of anorexic and bulimic compulsions. Work this program one day at a time. Working this program one day at a time. And Vita, thank you so very much for being willing to time us. Would you please give each speaker a 10-minute warning, and then a 5-minute warning, and finally a 2-minute warning? Thank you. Our first speaker is Carrie.
Hello, and now I read stuff, or I don't read anything, I just speak. Okay, hey everybody, I'm Carrie, compulsive overeater. These days I just identify as a compulsive overeater because it's just too long to say all the other stuff, and I'm lazy. I am a compulsive overeater. I'm a compulsive dieter. I was on a diet pretty much from puberty until I came into program, and probably a little after while I was still in program. And then I was, I tried throwing up. It wasn't really my thing. My body just doesn't like to puke. Didn't know about laxatives. That was all newer, like colonics and stuff. I don't think they had that yet. I mean, maybe someone did, but I didn't know about it. So my main forms of bulimia were, exercise. Exercise and the dieting wasn't a form of bulimia, but it was, an attempt to control food. And through that, sometimes my diets were more than perhaps a sane person would think a diet ought to be. And same with the exercise. It wasn't like, oh, moderate exercise is blah, blah, blah minutes for blah, blah, blah times per how many or many, whatever thing. And mine was never that. It was always like, how many hours can I do today? How many? And then if I wasn't able to do that, it was like the quantity of verbal abuse that I would need to heap on myself to get that cycle to start again. To have a recording of my brain to be able to play for people for your horror and amusement. Actually, not you people. You people would be like, oh, yeah, that's normal. But other people, normal people. So before I forget, I've been in program for 16 years. I have 15 years of abstinence. Abstinence for me is that I don't eat compulsively. It also means that I don't do any crazy behaviors around food or body, which is, no dieting. I don't read diet books. I don't read diet magazines. If a diet thing comes on the radio or the TV, I turn the channel and look away. If there's a billboard about changing one's body or something, I look away. None of that is any of my business anymore. I don't get to play those games. I don't use like dieter's tea or dieter's pills or dieter's vitamins or dieter's anything or anything that, and that includes food that's low this, low that, anything, any type of food or product that one might use on a diet, I don't do. One day at a time by the grace of God. It's funny to be asked to speak at an AB panel still because I think of myself as a compulsive overeater, which is maybe the joke of, of every bulimic or anorexic. Like, in my mind, I don't have a problem with eating too little. I have a problem with eating too much. And that's, I found that if I stick around this program long enough, inevitably someone who's, 60 pounds underweight is going to come to me and say they have a problem with overeating. Because that's happening here. In my mind, that is my problem. And for me, my top weight in this program was probably 50 pounds heavier than I am now. That was in high school. At some point, I started getting control of my own food. Mom wasn't putting it on the plate anymore. And I was like, I can do this. Blah, 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 blah. And I, ate a bunch. And then the diet started, or I think the diets had probably started before then. I mean, I think as soon as the hips started coming in, I was like, I must diet these things off. I don't understand this lady body thing that's happening. It must go away now. It turns out you can't diet away bones and other female structures. My first diet that I can remember was, a calorie-based diet, and it was probably a third of the calories one is supposed to have on a diet, because I'm an addict, and I don't want to get there later. I want to be there now. I'm like, can I be that skinny weight now? And I remember, you know, crossing a certain line in the sand with weight. And, you know, I look at the age that happened and I was like, I was just growing up. Like, that's just what happens. At a certain point, you're not, you know, 4 foot one anymore. Like, you grow a little taller and you weigh a little more, and that's what happens. But, you know, I remember from a very young age that not being acceptable. You know, and I remember, like, lately I've been flashing back on, you know, some of the things. There wasn't much, there was no positive body talk in my family. I didn't learn, like, positive self-image, which is not to say if I had, maybe I could have come from a family that was all positive self-image and I still would have had this disease. They're not necessarily linked, you know. But I certainly did not learn love for my body at an early age. And the kind of one body part that the family, I come from a very large extended family. And so there was this one section of the body that the women of the family had great pride about. And I remember at some point my mom specifically told me I did not have that body part. And it's kind of like, you know, every time I think of anything that was said about my body as a youth of America, it was negative. It was, oh, you don't have this. You have that and that. Or, oh, we all have bad this. Or, you know, whatever it was. Like, I was always included in the negative self-talk about the body and always excluded from the positive self-talk about the body. And, you know, it's still provocative. Like, that is still provocative. But I have so much sympathy now for my family, like so much sympathy for my aunts, for my grandparents, for all these people who couldn't do any better. You know, they don't have this. They can't do a fourth step. Like, I resent my whatever body part I hate. Like, they don't have that tool. They just, you know, believed whatever they had was wrong. And the funny thing is, the thing, at some point it came to me, probably when I started online dating, when people would write back to me and they were like, I want to meet you. And I was like, what is wrong with you people? I'm a hideous beast. But then, you know, at some point it was like, oh, strangers just looking at my image, like, because I always thought it was my charming personality that made people want to meet me. And then later in recovery, I was like, oh, maybe it's my horrible personality that keeps people from, just kidding. But, you know. But I was like, wait, oh, the body isn't going to take all the blame now? Like, people are looking at images of me, and they want to meet me based on that. And something in that triggered the thought, I have, you know, there are, say, seven to, I don't know, I can't remember how many aunts I have. I have a bunch of aunts, and we all basically look the same. And all of these people picked them to reproduce with. And, like, looking at the genetic, you know, similarity, like, I can guess that millennia ago, we all look pretty much the same still. And so over the course of history, like, people keep thinking we're attractive enough to get naked with. You know, and that's significant information, because I feel like I'm uniquely horrible. And I'm like, no, just the fact that, like, you know, any of us have survived to this point in history means that probably we're pretty cute, you know? And that's important for me. It's like, you know, that's not why I came into OA necessarily. Or maybe it is, probably, self-hatred. That could do it. There's something important to that. Like, my version of the view of me is inherently not accurate. Like, I lie to myself constantly. And, you know, that, and it's kind of like, okay, well, what's the comfort in the lie? You know, why do I choose to do that? What's the illusion of control or the wanting to fit in, you know? Like, pardon me, the thing of, like, you know, who knows where humans get it from, but that, like, I'm going to talk bad about myself and we're going to relate through talking bad about ourselves instead of, like, wow, I'm hot. Anyone else feel hot? Let's go feel hot together. You know, like, that seems like a much more positive way of being in the world. And, you know, here's the miracle of recovery. Like, through working all 12 steps, through having a sponsor, through going to a ton of meetings, through, you know, talking honestly in these rooms, and through, honestly, I think the fourth step was the biggest change in terms of my feeling differently about my physical form. you know, through that process, now most of the time I wake up, put on my clothes, and I'm like, hey, good looking. How'd you get so good looking? Like, that's my how'd you get so good looking is my, like, running thing I say to myself. And then I laugh and I laugh and I laugh because it's funny. But there's something in that. Like, even on my worst days, even on the days when I'm like, ah, how did I, you know, like, I'm aging. Like, ugh, things are moving. It's horrible. Like, whatever my junk is, like, whatever my, you know, the disease wanting to chat some, I can always come back to, you know what, for today, just for today, even if the disease is up and I feel whatever, then I am willing to let other people think I'm good enough. You know, I'm willing to let other people, like, you know, God's funny. Sometimes I, you know, if I wake up and the disease is loud and I'm hating on some specific body part or whatever my, whatever the disease wants to chat about that day and chew on, I swear to you, every single time, someone in the course of that day, a friend, someone I've never met, a homeless man, like, you name it, someone will specifically come up to me and compliment whatever thing that I'm tripping on that day. And I'm like, thank you, God. And, you know, maybe at some point it used to happen. I remember some guy, you know, back a long time ago when I was fresh out of college said, and I wore only men's extra large overalls, said, you know, something like, you have a fat, thank you. He said, you have a fat ass. And I was mortified and I wanted to die. And I went home and I probably didn't cry because I didn't have emotions back then. I probably ate a lot of food. And in retrospect, I look back on that. I was like, that man was so overcome with how amazing my fat ass was that he needed to yell at me. Like, and not even like, oh, I'm going to pretend that's what it is. It's like, in retrospect, I thought through the incident and I was like, no, really, he loved my body, but I couldn't hear it. Like, anyone that I would hear talking about, if anyone said anything about how I looked, I interpreted that as some sort of weird code, how they were really saying how horrible I was. Crazy people, crazy, crazy. That's not sane. Like, people would say nice things, and I'm like, oh, but they're really telling me my hair is bad. Or like, oh, but they're really saying I should go on a diet. Or like, what is that translator that's so psycho in my brain that make, like, takes fact and make it into insanity? I don't get that, you know? It's like, what the? So, you know, through recovery, through working the steps, like, you know, my body weight is stable now. My body size is stable. So it's like, you know, I came in to be a certain, like, I came in to get skinny. That's why I came to OA, let's be straight. And, you know, that I did get physical recovery. And the weird thing is I got physical recovery without having to exercise. For an exercise bulimic, you know how many hours that gave me back every week? Right. So that alone is a miracle that my body stays the same whether I do exercise or don't. And sometimes, like, oh, you know, I'll do a physical thing with some friends and it requires a lot of movement stuff and my body stays the exact same weight. And for the record, I did not weigh myself for at least the first 3 years I was in recovery. I couldn't. Because for me, the scale was a quick road to insanity. The weight was never good enough. I was never going to be skinny enough. It was never nothing. So that thing, I didn't own a scale. Did not have one. 3 or 4 years in recovery, I started being able to get on that machine maybe once every year or so. And now it's something like, it's a sanity check. You know, I've joked about this before, like, I want a scale that doesn't have numbers that says, like, you need a little more program, or, you know, hey, how's your step work going, or something like that, you know? Just like, because that's what it is for me. It's like, if my body changes, it's always because I'm, you know, in any direction, it's always because I am resting on my spiritual laurels. You know, I'm not doing the spiritual work that I get to do in here. You know, and every time, like, I think, oh, I'm too busy to do step work, or I'm too, you know, whatever the thing is, it's like, okay, I can be too busy to do step work, and I get to be unhappy. Welcome to reality. You know, it's like, this is the most efficient way to sanity, stability, and happiness for me. Period. End of story. Like, if I invest a little time in going to a meeting, if I invest a little time in going to doing the steps, whatever the thing is, calling a sponsee, blah, 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 then what I get back is completely, I mean, is like, is not anything I could have conceived. I came in here to get skinny. Okay. I have a normal size body now. That's amazing. I have that body regardless of whether or not I do an ounce of exercise. That's amazing. I don't have to diet. That's freaking amazing. I don't have to spend time like thinking about food, procuring food. Like somewhere along the line, I became one of those people who sometimes was like, oh, wait, I have to eat a meal now. Or like, oh, I don't really want the end of this whatever food. And I put it in the refrigerator and sometimes it gets moldy. Nothing ever got moldy. Nothing ever. And, you know, I was a volume eater. It's like that's why I was a compulsive exerciser. It wasn't that. It's that I wanted to eat a ton and I didn't want to have to pay for it. I didn't want anybody to see the quantity of food I was putting down. I didn't want to have to show my crimes on my body. And now it's like I don't do those crimes anymore. So then it's like not only do I save the time, the food prep time, I also save all the trying to get rid of the food time, you know. And I'm like, wow, I have time for hobbies now. I run a not-for-profit organization. Like, there's so much time in the day because I'm not busy being crazy anymore. And the amount of time I invest in OA is comparatively so little that, I don't know, it's just such an easy choice, which doesn't mean I choose it all the time. Let's be clear. Sometimes I choose to be miserable instead. Awesome. That's my right. That's the great thing about OA. Like nothing, you know, there's no shackles at the door. None of us have given away our fortune to be here. So it's like this or homelessness. Like, you know, it's very flowy, this program. So I get to come in here and be here if I want to. And if I feel like going out to my old insanity, right on, sister, get gone. You know, it's all refundable. Like my misery is refundable. So cool. And generally speaking, you know, for 16 years, I've decided, thank you. How many? Oh, there's signs and stuff. Okay. Generally speaking, you know, I choose to keep staying here. And, you know, I'll just say, as someone with 16 years in recovery, about 4 or 5 years ago, I started getting too busy to come to meetings. And I started getting, you know, too busy to do step work or return calls or, you know, do anything. And luckily, having gone to a lot of meetings, I'd heard that story before a bunch of times, and I knew where that story led. It led to relapse. And I talked to enough people in relapse to know relapse ain't so fun. Like, relapse is, it sounds like, oh, you know, right now abstinence is easy. It's no big deal. Like, staying abstinent doesn't actually require very much effort on my part. God has it handled. Got it all locked down. Cool. But having talked, first of all, my entire first year was relapse, so I kind of remember that was not so fun. But I've talked to enough people who had long-time abstinence, and they just got a little too busy to do whatever, and they, you know, went out. And coming back, from what I hear, is never quite so easy as it is to stay in. Like, I didn't get to control when my abstinence started. I didn't get to say, okay, well, today I'm going to be abstinent. I mean, I did. I said that constantly. Like, well, today I'm going to be abstinent. It just never actually happened. I didn't get to control, you know, how insane I was and how much step work and how much time I needed to be in here before the insanity was outweighed by the sanity. And I still don't. Like, if I'm having a day where I'm just crazy, where I'm just reacting to the world, not in acceptance, whatever that is, I don't get to choose, like, oh, well, I don't feel like being a crazy person today. I don't feel like having to do this work today. It's like, too bad, you know? It's like, I know you had other plans, but guess what? You're going to need to pull out some pen and paper and do a 10-step, like a spot check or something. And, you know, seeing people go out, it's like I realized that I needed a second program. And I did not want a second program. And I'm not going to talk about what that program is because it's irrelevant. But it relates to my abstinence because I realized I was going to lose my abstinence here, you know, if I did not take the steps to go seek recovery somewhere else in another area that was giving me trouble. And that, you know, I'm super grateful that I did that because I saw the writing on the wall and I knew it wasn't going to go well. And, you know, having at that time probably what, 10 or having a decade of abstinence didn't mean anything. Because I was just as capable of going out and binging any given day as anybody who walked in here knew. The good news is that having time, you know, it's one step at a time, one day at a time. I get one day. That's all I get. But having a bunch of days lined up, I know the warning signs now, and I know the solution. You know, in the beginning, it was a big experiment. It was like, what plan of eating helps me be less crazy? What combination of tools helps me be less crazy? How much step work do I have to do to be less crazy? It's all very mysterious. And hey, is this going to work for me? That's a big old mystery. Like, I mean, that's the scariest thing in the world, coming in here as a newcomer and not having a freaking clue if this is going to work. And then having to turn over my will in my life anyway. I'm like, what? I mean, that's terrifying. You know, that's freaking terrifying. And that's like, if I'm doing steps 1, 2, and 3, I am terrified because I don't know if a higher power is going to solve this problem and I have to give it up anyway. That's terrifying. And, you know, through walking through that fear, you know, I get to have this life I couldn't have imagined. Like, I have so many clothes. It turns out I really love clothing. Love that stuff. When I got rid of the self-hatred, I was like, I did not want to wear men's overalls anymore. I did not want to wear extra large t-shirts. I was like, I love clothes and I love the colors and the shapes and all this stuff is super fun. It's like an art project every day. What's not to love? You know? And so, and being the same body size for so many years, let me tell you, you collect some clothing. Like, I didn't it wasn't like, oh, I'm bigger, I'm smaller. So it's like every few years I'm having to toss entire wardrobes. It's like, no, I'm just the same size. And so I have a moth problem now. It's a long story. So that's the downside of abstinence, people. Clothing moths. That's the downside if you're looking for one. So, you know, it's like being abstinent. I get things I didn't know I wanted. I did not want an emotional life. I thought that was not something that sounded like any fun at all. And now it's this miracle where I'm one of those people who like cries at sad commercials, you know, and that, which sounds maybe not so fun if anyone's new, but what it means is that I get to feel everything, which means that I get to feel love more deeply. I get to feel humor more deeply. I get to feel everything more deeply. And because of that, I get to be one of many. I get to become a human, which was not something I really wanted, let's be honest. But it turns out it's pretty good as a human. It turns out that when I allow myself to be vulnerable, people will help me, which I didn't even know was possible. And I, you know, just to wrap up, I get a relationship with a higher power I definitely didn't want, who keeps handling stuff that's way bigger than I can. So thanks for letting me share.
Hi, I'm Allison, compulsive eater bulimic. Oh my God, thank you so much, Carrie. Wow. All right. So what was it like? Keeping my bulimic compulsions turned over, I guess, was not what really drew me into program. I had stopped binging primarily in college and sought outside help for that disease, which was just day and night obsession. But I was in a meeting earlier and heard a fellow share how her bulimia was on hiatus. And I guess that's really how I can explain how it kept resurfacing in my life, even though it wasn't like it was in high school and college, like the 10 times a day, to the point where I was stealing money out of my grandmother's purse and stealing it out of the cash register at work and, you know, eating off of, you know, I worked in college at this, like, buffet, like, in a hotel setting, and I was one of those hotel restaurant waitresses that would clear the banquet halls and yada yada, and I did eat the food off of, you know, other people's plates. My disease is not pretty. Like, it's a, you know, I think I'm 3 years in program now, and I think I'm just able to really identify with the bulimia part of my disease, because I think some of the shame is lessening as I realize that I do have a disease, and it isn't because I have a lot of poor character that I'm a bulimic, but it's because I have this disease and this incapability to relate to release my life to a higher power. You know, I came into program 3 years ago mainly because my carb comas didn't work anymore. I would pretty much starve myself all day, and then I would eat in the afternoon to the evening and, you know, medicate myself with high-carb foods, relax, go to sleep, wake up in the middle of the night, eat again, and then go on that, you know, starvation thing the next day. That's what really drove me to OA. And somehow I had heard about OA, but I knew I couldn't come until I was really ready to be willing. And so like 9 months to a year before actually walking through the door, I had thought about it periodically. But who knows what that was, January 10th, 3 years ago, like why that day I just couldn't hate myself anymore. And, you know, and I've been willing to listen to others, you know, since then. Thank you, God. I've always been really self-reliant, and, you know, my story's in the big book. Like, that's what kills us, right? And I don't have to do that today. I, too, am getting to the point in my program where I see things are, I know I could be throwing up again easily. Like, and I didn't think it was that close. Like, you know, if it's just from here to there, it really is that close for me. And I've had to go to another 12-step program, too, because that's the issue that's feeding my fear that I want to eat over. And I am more willing today to face the fear and deal with the fear than I am to deal with the food. That's like a gift, right, that I don't care. And so I'm releasing fear through that other program today. And it does get easier. And I don't know, like I also think that, you know, you talked a lot about loving yourself and, you know, and hating yourself and how all those messages run through there. And I really feel like I'm being accountable to other people today, because if left to my own devices and if I were the only person in the world, I'm not so sure I wouldn't still destroy myself with food. But I have people in my life today that love and care about me, and I need to be honest with them. When I make a commitment to them, I make it very from my heart, and I have to live up to that for them. Because I value the friendships that I have with the people in this program today. And I guess one of the things that I got in this program that's such a gift is that I actually can enjoy food today. And I hated food. I hated my kitchen. I hated grocery shopping. I hated food preparation. I hated it. And I remember when I had, you know, met my current sponsor, you know, I told her that I would be just so happy if I never had to eat again. Like, I just would be so happy. And she's all like, how is that any way to live? Like, well, we're going to, you know, food's our teacher. I'm like, what the does that mean? Like, how? Like, yeah, our teachers are, you know, our food is our friend. And again, it's like, what the F does that mean? I don't even get that. How can you even say that? And, you know, and there were times that I was so emotional. I did not get the relief in step five. I actually, in my second year of program, I was so out of my mind that I was like, if I am going to be this crazy and this unhappy, I might as well just go eat. And I don't know why I didn't leave. I really, to this day, I can't tell you why. I never thought I was an exercise bulimic. I thought I was just, that was part of a healthy lifestyle. However, I injured my hip running, and I couldn't run anymore. And so my way of coping with the world, like, go, you know, pound it out on the sidewalk, go pound it out on the treadmill, go pound it out in the, you know, 2-hour workout class. You know, like I couldn't do that anymore. And so I really felt like I was going crazy. And the relief came in the steps. The relief came in 6 and 7, and I'm on 8 and 9 now. Like, I'm getting very willing very fast. And I too value the peace I have today. Like, my outside, I weigh exactly the same thing. I actually weigh the same weight I did when I was put on my first diet in high school. Yeah, it's kind of funny to think. I actually might be 5 pounds heavier than I was, but, you know, according to my doctor, I'm perfect BMI. Like, now, for somebody who's achieved perfection, tried to achieve perfection her whole life, to have a medical professional actually use the word perfect, I was still pretty sure that there's something wrong with his language. Like, that's me and my arrogance wanting to challenge, you know, the doctor. But he said it's perfect. And so I'm, you know, the irony is, too, is that I actually changed my weight on my driver's license to stop being a lie for the first time in my life. And then I gained 5 more pounds. And I think that's just, and that's when the doctor said I was perfect. So whatever. Because I've been taken to doctors since I was like 14, 15, and I was overweight back then as a child, and I never was. If I was like, I was a stick, like I was a boy, I was a tom girl, and yeah. So it's just funny how I choose not to buy in to other people's opinion about me today, to the best of my ability. And what I was saying was, is like, my outside life is exactly the same, including my weight. So my weight's the same. I live in the same house. I drive the same car. I have the same 3 sons. I have the same job. Like, nothing on the outside has changed since I've come in program. And yet, I feel like the happiest woman on earth. Like, you know, and I don't know how, like, I get to see hummingbirds today. I get to wake up and drink coffee today. I get to, like, hang out with you guys today. I get to, like, I have such an amazing free life, you know? And it's all because I've changed my perspective. So this food thing, like, hating food. So when I was going through that, like, 2 years when I was gone off the wall, sometimes I'd be so despondent that my sponsor would call me over and she would actually feed me, because I couldn't feed myself. Like, I just really, I couldn't. I didn't know. I didn't know how to feed myself. And she made the most delicious food. I'm like, how do you do that? What's in that? And she started teaching me, like, oh, you just do this, you just do that, you just do this. And so then I started, she goes, you experiment. How can you experiment? Like, what do you do? Well, now I'm starting to make really delicious food. It's so crazy. Like, I can actually taste my food today. And I actually prefer, strangely, I actually prefer that stuff that's supposed to be healthy for you. It lasts longer. Like, when I eat my proteins and when I eat my greens and when I eat nutrient-dense food, I don't get the cravings. I don't get, like, hungry between lunch and dinner, you know? I was talking to somebody earlier, and we were talking about the expressions we use when things bother us or whatever. And one of my favorite ones is, like, I heard myself say to her, I can't stomach that. It's like, how perfect that is for a bulimic to say that, right? Like, we, you know, of course I couldn't stomach it. I could never stomach anything. I wouldn't allow it to go down. Like, I wouldn't, it couldn't stay there. And I really don't have a problem with food. I had a therapist tell me that. You don't have a problem with food. I'm like, no, you don't understand. She goes, oh, no. And I don't. I don't have a problem with food. I have a problem with feelings. And less and less today, I have a problem with feelings. Some days I wish it's one of those days that you described where, you know, you're just going to have one of those days where you're going to have to grow. It's a growing day. And it's like, damn it, I wish that would, like, hurry up and move past. And there's, like, nothing about growing that is fast for me. Like, it's all very slow. It's very deliberate. But the beauty of it, it's also very long-lasting. And so no matter how long it takes me to get to where I'm going, that's just building. It's building that healthy muscle that's going to allow me to keep it and practice it longer and stay stronger. I have my mind wants to run off, beat me up. It wants to pick you apart. It wants to find things wrong with you. And then the bottom line, it's basically fear. Fear is everything for me. And I can't allow myself the luxury of being in fear anymore. It will take me out fast. I don't know that I have a lot more to share. Does anybody have any questions about how I work my program or specifics about, I mean, that's later part in the panel, but for me and my time. Yeah. Oh, thank you. I did want to talk about that. My whole disease was always about being very black and white. And there was good food and there was bad food and there's things that I could have and not have. And I punished myself or rewarded myself with those kinds of choices. And so today, there is no food that I will not allow myself. I heard a speaker say something about we all have our own food print, just like we all have our own fingerprint. And that really resonated with me because, you know, when I first came into program, I really wanted to hear your abstinence so I could pick one that sounded like I could do that. My bottom line abstinence is I don't puke no matter what. That for me is good enough. However, I do make food choices today. I've done a lot of work. Like, I don't exercise bulimically anymore. I actually don't do cardio. I do yoga. And that was huge for me. I don't drink diet soda. Because, you know, that's one of those free foods. And, like, bulimics are all about getting away with free, right? Like, it's like what you can get away with, you know, what you want it, but you don't really, you know. Okay. I actually drank myself through so much diet soda that I lost my taste buds and my mouth turned to metal and I couldn't taste anything for a weekend. And that scared me. And so I stopped drinking diet soda. Somewhere along the line, thank you. Somewhere about a year ago, I started going vegetarian because my sponsor was vegetarian and she was making these delicious meals. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? I think I could do that. So I started eating soy and quinoa and had a lot of cheese and dairy in my diet. And I basically had a stomach ache for a year and it got so bad, but it was so slow. Like, food is like a slow release agony. You know, it doesn't, if it came on like brutally, maybe I would have gotten it earlier. I don't know. But, I went and had myself tested and program gave me the ability to know that I was worth it enough to have myself tested with like a blood test, and they can tell what you're allergic through a blood test. And so I no longer eat cheese or quinoa or soy. And guess what? I don't have stomach aches anymore. Okay? And then there was one more thing that this is my latest, and I swear to you, this is not me. Like, I could not do this because I had two food groups when I was an active bulimic, and it was chocolate and fruit. And anything, like, that's all I pretty much would eat. And that one day on the way to... one morning I woke up and I swore to my sponsor, I said, oh my God, if I can do it, just don't ask me to give up coffee. And then, I went to yoga and my yoga teacher says, do you drink coffee? And I was like, huh. Like, because the message from God doesn't, for me, doesn't just come in these meetings. It doesn't come through my sponsor. It's like in little signs all over life. I feel very lucky to be tapped in to hear things and see things and feel things just because. And so anyway, I was having another reaction in my body, and it's related to chocolate. And I haven't had chocolate for like 5 weeks now. And funny, that symptom has gone away also. So God is slowly showing me the way to honor this receptive vessel. Like, if I'm the vessel and he's the transmitter of information, if my job is to be of service to others, and I need to hear what message that is from him, it, energy, whatever it is, then cleaning out my channel of some of these toxic substances is my work today, and I'm willing. So other than that, I can eat anything else, and I stick to 3 meals a day and 2 optional snacks. That answer your question? Thank you. With 2 minutes, is there another question for the last minute? Yeah. That's a great question. She asked how my relationship has changed with my sons being a mother. I'm not a doormat anymore. I think one of the things that I have a great relationship with my 3 adult sons, but I can be a pushover, and I can put everybody's needs in front of my own. And I found it most challenging to treat myself like I treat other people and make myself a priority. And so I realized about 6 months ago, maybe about 9 months ago, as part of my step work reveal, that I actually matter in my own equation. Like, it's not just about, like, this plus this and, you know, okay, you've got it all figured out. Like, I actually am part of the equation, and a very important part. And, yeah, learning to express that. You know, when you stop vomiting, like, when I first learned to speak up for myself, everything was very, very loud, very intense, very off-putting. And then, you know, the contrary action shut me up. Today, I'm trying to hit that neutral spot where I can communicate clearly and intently, unoffensively, to honor myself and the relationships that I care about. Thank you. I think that's it. I might have 30 seconds, and I think I'm going to end with that and hand it over to Nick, right?
Hi, I'm Nick. I'm a compulsive overeater and bulimic. Before I get to what it was like, I was thinking about a couple of things, one of them because of another panelist mentioned it. But on the way over here, I had a little thing of yogurt and like 6 ounces of blackberries. And I was thinking to myself, you know, in the past, before I found recovery, I wouldn't have had anything on the way over here because here is too public a place for me to be able to throw anything up. So I'm kind of like a lazy exercise bulimic. I just didn't want to do the exercise. I didn't want to be accountable for anything I put in my system. I wouldn't have had anything on the way over here. But on the way home, it would have been a free-for-all. I mean, the most caloric, tastiest, whatever I could eat, there were no bounds, outside of what my stomach could hold. That's what I would have on the way home. Just thinking how different that is today. And that was good. The other thing I heard, the word BMI, you know, I'm pretty happy with the way I look today. And the doctor still is like, he's like, yeah, your BMI is a little high. I'm like, that government chart is full of crap, you know. It's awful, particularly when it comes to men. So anyway, I just thought I'd throw it out there because I was always been a little ticked about that. I'm from Flint, Michigan. And there's a few things in my childhood that I think contributed to this developing this thing that I have. The first thing is when I was young, 5 or 6 years old, I realized I was one of the shortest kids in my class, and that kind of bothered me at the time. And when I got to 10, 11, 12 years old, I realized that I was probably gay, although I really didn't know what it was at the time. That's what I thought. And that bothered me. But the thing that bothered me the most was about the same time, right before I hit puberty, right around there, I started putting on weight. And, you know, that was the part that bothered me absolutely the most, that made me so self-hating, because I felt, well, that's the one I can control. You know, I am a lazy piece of garbage because I can't do this, because I'm putting on all this weight. And kids are vicious. I mean, kids and very, very old people are absolutely vicious when it comes to this kind of stuff. I'll tell a quick story. My grandfather came in. I was eating a bag of Doritos. I was near my top weight, which is about 190 pounds or so. And I was eating a bag of Doritos, and my grandfather came in, who was about 90 years old at the time. And my grandfather's a chronic alcoholic, and he was round as a beach ball, too. So he was not somebody to talk. But he walked in the room, and he looks at me, and he goes, "What you eating there?" And I looked at him, and I kind of gave him this sarcastic kick. I'm like, "Doritos?" And he goes, "Well, that's why you're so fat." And he just walked out of the room. Well, I tell you, you know, it's funny. I actually, that was motivation for me. That happened right before I went to college. I'm skipping around a little bit. That happened right before I went to college. And to put that idea in my head is, I am going to lose this damn weight despite that man. What a jerk. But anyway, I'm getting back to before. So I started gaining weight at a pretty early age. I was like 10 or 11. And, you know, going through high school, I never really was able to take it off. I don't know that I ever really tried dieting. I just was heavier, you know. I don't know that that was really my thing. It bothered me, but I really wasn't willing to work hard enough to get rid of it at that point. I went away to college, and after being there for 2 or 3 months, I don't know if it was the independence of being in college, having my own place, sort of. I had a roommate. But just this idea struck me that, you know what? I could just throw up, you know, because then I could eat whatever I wanted, you know, and then I could lose weight. And I've always wanted to lose this weight, and it's God's fault. That was another thing of mine. It's God's fault. You know, I can't blame anybody, so I'm going to blame God. That's what I felt. It was me throwing up was giving the middle finger to God. That's kind of the way I thought of it. It's like, you're going to make my metabolism so low, screw you. I'm going to take care of this my own way. And I had this real, there was so much anger around that too, the unfairness and all that stuff. So when I was in college, I started throwing up, and that was several times a day, sometimes once a day, sometimes several times a day, but it was frequent. And the weight came off quickly. It was extremely effective at getting my weight down. And I went from 190 to about 140 within the course of, 5 months or so. And I came home, and one of the first people I ran into was a good friend of mine from high school named Francesca, she's really popular, and she's really, really nice, and she was always a good friend. And she came up to say hi, and she looked at me, and she goes, "Your eyes, they're so beautiful." And my first thought was, I am never going to be fat again. Don't ever, ever let me be fat again, you know. I was like, because people say nice things to you when you're skinny. You know, you could hear the anger in my voice because I was so determined. I was like, this is where it's at. I have to stay here. And that solidified bulimia in my life for at least 20 years. I'm 46 now. Well, that's not true. I'm 45. I'll be 46 in April. I try to, like, own it early because I'm getting older. I'm like, I'm going to be 50 soon. I'm going to start saying that soon, too, because I'm going to need to own that one. And, you know, I'm not quite ready for that yet. But anyway, That happened for years. I have to mention this because it's how I found OA. I am also an alcoholic, and I have many, many years of sobriety, almost a quarter century of sobriety in the other program. My sponsor in that program was also in this program. And so I'm throwing up almost every single day, and I am sober in the other program. And just figure, well, you know, I don't need to tell anybody about this. You know, this is just how I keep my body in shape. You know, one of my big justifications was, well, the Romans did it. You know, they had these whole things devoted to these. I read about something when I was a kid, I guess. These big troughs where that's just what they did. They just went and threw everything up and, hey, we can eat whatever we want. I was like, that sounds like a great plan to me. Then you can eat whatever you want. But I never felt right about it. You know, that sociological justification to me was not really holding water. I want to talk a little bit about how I did this. One of the things that I like to do, and this started when I was a kid, is I like to isolate when I ate. I was an angry kid. I felt like I just didn't fit in. Sometimes I still have a hard time socially. But as a kid, it was really bad. And, you know, my parents would make this great meal, and I'd come downstairs, and I'd make a plate for myself, and I'd go to my room and lock my door. And that's how I ate. You know, it was ritualistic for me to be alone. At work today, I still struggle to go and eat with coworkers, and I prefer to eat at my desk alone. I still do that. You know, I was just thinking about that the other day. I'm like, oh, my God. You know, I need to work on that, really, you know? But anyway, I would do that. When the bulimia came into it, it went to a whole new level. Because for me, you know, to exercise that part of my disease, I had to be alone. You know, there couldn't be people around. You know, I couldn't do it in a public place like this, you know, unless I was really desperate. I couldn't do that. If I was camping, I was kind of really screwed because it's, you know, out in the middle of the woods, you know, what are you going to clean up with? You know, whatever. Anyway, I had to be alone. That was like a big deal. So, you know, I had roommates throughout my my disease, and what I would do is on the way home from work, I would stop, you know, McDonald's or whatever and get something really unhealthy and then get some donuts or, get, you know, whatever. I mean, it didn't matter to me because I'm not going to have to own it, so might as well get all the stuff that I want to eat. If I ordered a pizza, that wasn't enough, by the way. You know, I'd order like a large pizza and I'd have to get breadsticks on the side because why not? You know, it's free, right? I remember my brother. Oh, God, I just remembered this for the first time since I've been abstinent since September 22nd, 2002. Happy birthday, by the way, recent birthday. My brother said to me one time, you know, when people would find out that there weren't a lot that found out. When I found out that I was throwing stuff up, everybody would like, oh, that's horrible. They're like, you need to, you know, you should really get some help. And then, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, are you okay? And the mental health and stuff. My brother's response was, you're cheating. And you'd have to know my brother to know that was exactly what I would expect him to say. when I had roommates and I wanted to do this, you know, I'd eat all this food. I'd come home and sometimes unexpectedly my roommate got back early or was there and I would go off on my roommate and they would have no idea what hit them. No, they don't understand why I'm so angry that they're there, you know. And I try to figure out, well, what am I going to do now, you know. I have like two chickens here, and I've got, you know, what am I going to do? I have a roommate, and I am so angry I don't want to share it with him, not at this point, you know. And it led me to a place where, you know, in the future, it actually took me a while to kind of realize once I got in the program, I have some roommates that I have to go talk to, you know. And that was difficult for me, too. Being a male bulimic, you know, we're at a convention. I haven't met a male bulimic since I came in the program. Okay, there's another one. Fantastic. Exercise bulimics, yes. But that's fantastic. That is not something that I wanted to, thank you. That is not something that I wanted to talk about very much. It was something that because I never heard any other men talking about it. I mean, even in the gay community, I know they're all over the place, but they don't talk about it. I know they don't, you know. It's something that was really, really shameful to me. So I'm sober at the time 20 years roughly, and my sponsor in the other program is coming to this program, and I decide I had a night where I ate a lot, and I threw it up, and I felt like I broke something. I felt like, uh-oh, you know, I'd done something to my body. You know, I might have done something really bad, and I was scared for a while there. And I decided I should tell my sponsor about it. And I finally just leveled with my sponsor in the other program about what I was doing. And, you know, it was God putting him into my life that he actually was in this program. And so he said, well, why don't you come to this meeting? And I went to that meeting. And, you know, when I come to the meeting and when I get the literature, the first thing I want to do is I want to hear your stories. I want to see if I relate, okay? And that first meeting, all they talked about were steps. And when the literature that I picked up, all I read were steps. And I'm like, I almost left because I wanted to hear that identification that I needed. I don't know why I bring that up, but that was my first thing, you know. I did eventually get that identification. But I remember at that meeting thinking, this is so stupid. You know, I'm already in the other program. You know, technically, I can solve this with the other program. You know, I should be able to. And thinking how dumb this meeting was. And I couldn't stand that you guys would say, and you're worth it at the end. I was just like, you know what? You know, you're not worth it. If you're saying it, you're not worth it. And I mean, I am sitting here being this cynical little crap, you know. And, you know, you guys are happy. And I'm sitting there judging you, you know. And it took me probably at least a year to stop walking into meetings, you know, thinking about how stupid it is and how I shouldn't have to do this. I feel embarrassed that I have to do this. I don't like the joy. Get rid of the joy and I'll be okay. You know, it was just kind of silly. So I had a really hard time adapting to Overeaters Anonymous. Very, very difficult time. I wanted, you know, some, I haven't gotten to the last steps, you know. I'm 3 years abstinence, but I haven't gotten to the final steps yet. And I don't know, sometimes it's a little tricky. You know, they say the credits don't transfer, and that's true. But there are certain things, it's like, well, wait a minute. There's a lot of stuff that actually did go on a four-step and a fifth-step in the other program. So trying to work through with my sponsor in the other program, who happens to be the same guy that's my sponsor in OA. Well, I did that on purpose, because I know how to play that game, you know. Should I go after that relationship and get the no answer? And then I go, well, wait, that's the way I said it to him. So I'll rephrase it for the other sponsor and then get the answer that I want. And then, you know, essentially just basically taking my own will, which I know how to do really, really well. So with this guy, I don't really get the opportunity to do that. I have to tell him the truth that spans both programs. I will tell you that... when I came in here, I treated the... Oh, this is kind of important, I guess, mainly for the bulimics in the room, is I've been asked the question before is, you know, how did your weight go, like, once you stopped doing it when you came in? And I'm happy to report that I came in about 167, and today I'm 157, and I never gained a pound since I came in. That's not everybody's experience. But for me, I knew that I wasn't being accountable for what I ate. Therefore, it's like logically, I'm like, well, if I'm gonna stop throwing up, I have to either eat less, which took a little while to get used to, and I have to take care of myself. You know, I don't exercise compulsively, but I have to exercise some. I got a little Fitbit that tells me when I'm done, basically. I have to do that, and I have to eat less. And I'm just so grateful that I know that this isn't everybody's story, but my story is I'm so grateful that I was able to adapt to that pretty quickly and understand that I have to be accountable for everything I take into my body now. You know, I can't – if I overeat, and I do sometimes, I feel that thing, and fortunately it doesn't last long, that says, well, you could get rid of this, you know. You could get rid of this. And then I get that OA, you know – that resentment. I go, this isn't the real sobriety. You know, you could just go get rid of it and then start over. And I don't want to do that. I kind of like where I've gotten with this. I have a long way to go in this program. I guess I'll talk a little about my abstinence too. Actually, I can relate to the other panelist here. My abstinence is, there's one rule. I don't throw up. That's it. You know, there are certain foods that I won't eat. And is it okay to mention foods here? I've been to meetings where they don't want to talk about specific foods. I'm going to talk about specific foods. I'm going to throw them out there. There are certain things I absolutely can't touch, and I know that I can't touch. I'm not a sugar person, but Swedish fish, I can't touch. I have to be really, really careful with sushi, because I can eat sushi forever. I can just keep eating sushi. It's like I never get full when I eat sushi. Probably my number one offender for me, this is such a weird one, but honey mustard Snyder's, those little pretzel things they have, are vicious because they're salty and they're carby and they've got the little tang to it. And that's what I liked. I wasn't so much a sugar person, unless you added carbs to it. So cupcake, bring it on. But when it came to carbs, I really, really liked that. I have an Italian roommate that likes to cook a lot of carbs, so I have to, like, whenever I'm not at home, I have to eat stuff that's not carbs. But for me, there's just certain foods that I know I can't eat. They're not on a never can't. They're not on a, you know, reset your date list. I just don't eat them, you know. When it comes to sweets, I feel very lucky that I don't have that. If I have a little bit, I have to have a ton. It all kind of, for me, it all rolls into the idea that whatever I eat, I have to be accountable for, you know. And if I eat too many sweets, I know how I get all wired, you know, and then I crash and I feel really tired and I can't really work well in the afternoon. I don't really like that feeling, you know. That's just kind of a lousy feeling to have, so I don't really have too much of that. I think, you know, for me, it's really simple to be that way. I may eventually add some stuff to my list. Today I eat really, really healthy. Like I said, I still hate that BMI thing, but, you know, today I treat myself really well. The first couple of years in the program, I say the program. Is that wrong? I do. I put the in front of it, you know? It's totally random, but I hear people say program. I'm like, what happened to the? So I say the program. So anyway, for what it's worth. Last time I did this, I lost my train of thought, too, and I did this time, too. But, yeah, today my abstinence is I simply don't throw up. I call my food into my sponsor, or I text it to him. Kind of depends. But I'm not perfect about committing it all in the morning and then doing it. Just the nature of where I get my food and what's going on. And I don't always know what it's going to be, but I commit it before I have it. Thank you. I commit it before I have it. I know there's one more thing that I wanted to add here that was actually pretty important, and I'm totally, totally spacing it. Talking about the steps. I have worked the steps 1, 2, and 3 with my sponsor. We're still working out what is, we've gone through some of the things on step 4. We talked about what should go on a 4th step when it comes to this, because some of it's already been covered. He's my sponsor in the other program, so he knows my 4th step from that program, too. So there's stuff that has to be, there's a lot of roommate issues, like I talked about before, that I have to get into. For me, there's a lot of emotion issues when it comes to food. You know, food was my comfort, you know. Besides alcohol, once that was gone, food was the way I made myself feel well. So today I have to do esteemable things to make myself feel well. So, you know, my honest answer is right now we're working on 4. It's several years into the program. You know, if you think it's behind, okay. Well, that's where we're at, you know. That's kind of what I'm doing today. Hopefully I'll remember what I was going to say later. But I think that's all I got. Thank you, guys.
Now is the time for questions and answers. Please raise your hand, and I will call on as many questioners as possible. Your questions can be directed at one person specifically or generally for the panel to answer. Please be aware that we are recording this panel, and when asking a question, your voice may be audible on the recording. Who would like to ask the first question? Okay, so the question is, when we gave up the main compulsive food behavior, did other ones come up?
When I stop throwing up, like I have this, like I told you, I have this Fitbit thing, and if the thing tells me that I can have this many calories a day, I'll make sure I have less than that. You know, even if I'm allowed to have more. So for me, I started a little, not major, but a little bit of an anorexic, you know, flavor started coming into what I was doing, and that's not there anymore, but that's kind of what happened. I was like, well, now I got to eat less and less and less, and so, yeah, that's a really good question.
Hey, Carrie, compulsive reader. It's funny, and when I look back, I feel like I would have chosen to give up compulsive eating first. But in retrospect, what happened was that compulsive dieting and compulsive exercise were taken from me first. And I kept compulsively eating for about the first year I was in program. And for me, it was I needed to pay for my crimes. I needed to have a cause and effect. And, you know, after, and that one was the hardest, like, I wasn't giving that one to God. You know, I theoretically was, but it wasn't really happening. I was like, you can have the food, except for I really just want to keep eating it all the time. So as long as that works for you, God, then we're totally cool. So I think what happened was that, you know, the dieting and exercise went first. And then as my recovery strengthened, as my spiritual base, I wanted the physical recovery to come first. And then maybe those other two kinds, emotional and spiritual, but I didn't really care. But instead, the spiritual recovery made a firm base. And then the emotional recovery got stable on top of that. And then the food took care of itself. And so in a way, my, you know, the food came last. And then for a while, I didn't realize alcohol was a food. And I was like, I can just drink anytime. And I was like, why am I drunk? So for me, I had to come to understand that liquids are still food, even though they're liquid. And then at that point, you know, the alcohol took care of itself. But there was a minute there where it switched to being a liquid form of food. It was really exciting.
Okay, so the question is, how do you be rigorously honest without beating yourself up?
Carrie, compulsive reader. I think there are a few things. One, after in the resentment, in the big book, in the resentment inventory, it's, you know, first they say, what do I resent? What do I resent? Why do I resent it? Or what do I, whatever feeling, what do I fear? What do I, what are my sex harms? Blah, blah, blah. Why do I feel that way? And then what parts of me are affected? And then after that, in the big book, there are prayers. There are resentment prayers, and there are fear prayers, and there are sex prayers. And I say those before I look at my part because I have to give that back to God. I have to give my part back to God. So I say the resentment prayers, the fear prayers, the sex prayers before I do the fourth and fifth columns, the what's my part. And for me, I break it down physically, emotionally, spiritually, what's my part. And then what are my defects at play in the fifth column? But, you know, I guess the main answer for that to me is in 5, 6, and 7. Because in 5, and the AA 12 and 12 talks about, like, I haven't done a fifth step until I've heard someone else's fourth step. Which is super important because I think I'm specially horrible until I hear someone else do the same step work. And then I'm like, oh, we're all just the same. Got it. So that's a huge part in how I don't beat myself up because I realize I'm just like everyone else. And then in 6 and 7, understanding that I have defects and that everyone has defects, and it's just the nature of being human and we're all doing the best we can. 6 and 7 for me are a lot about self-forgiveness and the forgiveness of others. And then 8 and 9, I get to go be one of many. I get to just say, like, hey, I screwed up. You know, sorry, I'm a jerk. Sometimes it happens. And then people never have the reaction I expect them to have. They always are like, it's weird that you're apologizing to me and I feel awkward about it. And, like, it cracks me up. 9 always cracks me up. Every time I make amends, it's never what I thought it was going to be, and it's inevitably really funny. So I think that's part of how I don't beat myself up, because I remember that I'm powerless over my defects, and that just as my assets make me one of many, so do my defects, and that I don't get to ever be perfect or better than everyone else. I get to just keep screwing up like everyone else. And that's why we have a 10. So.
It's funny that you asked that question because I was thinking, wait a minute, I actually am going through that right now. Just had to get honest about a situation where I had to make an amends. And my first instinct is to get on the pity pot and feel bad for, oh, everybody hates me because you did that, you know, and to sulk in that self-pity. And what I do instead is I have to act myself into better thinking. I can't sit there in that thinking and expect myself to just get better. It doesn't work for me. And it's really hard, you know, because it takes a while for the thinking to catch up to the action. But I'm taking the actions now, you know. And the thinking is starting to get better, but it's hard sometimes. So anyway, I just try to avoid that and act instead.
Another question? Okay, so the question is, what was the turning point in terms of surrendering to recovery?
Carrie Pulsar Reader. I think for me it was something in the Big Book where my sponsor had me, my sponsor, for the record, was a male anorexic. So, and he and everyone said, find someone who has what you want, and or find someone who tells your story. And I was like, he doesn't really tell my story, but he had what I wanted, which was recovery. And I couldn't put my finger on that until years later. I was like, oh, he had recovery, and so he was the perfect sponsor for me, regardless of his story. But you know, for me, it was in the Big Book. They there's this section where they talk about strange mental blank spots, which is. It's in, I think, Fred's story or somewhere in there, and it talks about, you know, this guy, this alcoholic who's, you know, he knows he doesn't want to drink because things go badly when he drinks. And then in the moment when his mind is supposed to protect him from this behavior that kills him, he has a strange mental blank spot. And that phrase, I was like, oh, damn. Like, that's the, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. I'm not going to do this. I'm never going to do this again. I'm not going to do this. And then in the moment when my mind is supposed to stop my destructive behavior, it just goes like, and I do it. And that nailed me. Reading that nailed me. And I was like, oh, I have this problem. And then I became willing to work the steps because I knew I was in trouble.
Another question? Great. So the question is, so how do you know how to exercise healthfully, and how do you know when you're exercising to purge or to be extreme or bulimic? Did I paraphrase it okay? I will go ahead and tell you my experience on that situation, because when I was exercising at first, I didn't think that it had anything to do with my emotions. I did always exercise, and I felt that I was being happy. It was only when I was incapable that I realized that there was an emotional component that was not getting released, and it was driving me insane, and I hadn't yet come to a surrender with God about it. I had to be willing to wait. I had to be willing, for me, this is just for me and my experience, is that if I didn't know if it was okay to exercise, I did not allow myself to exercise. And because the one great gift I feel I have in recovery is I intuitively know what to do. Like, my God speaks real clear and real direct to me. And today I wait until it's clear and direct.
Hey, Carrie, compulsive reader. For me, that meant, and again, just for me, that meant I didn't exercise for about 3 years. I couldn't. I'd lost the right. I didn't know how to exercise sanely. I couldn't control the switch, and so it meant that I just didn't. And honestly, it was physically painful not to exercise. My body started aching. I had all these weird phantom aches, but it was like, for me, it was like, this is a life or death thing. Am I going to take it seriously? And then at some point, you know, and I say 3 years, but I don't know if that's really, I mean, I knew it was at least 3 years. It may have been longer. I can't, time is weird. But at some point I became willing to do physical things. And actually for a while I had a physical job after that. And that, I think, kind of eased me back into a saner interaction with moving my body. And now I can do physical stuff. There are certain things I don't do. I don't go to gyms. I just don't. I don't do anything that the sole purpose of it is exercise. I can do things that have other benefit, like I can hike in nature and see stuff, and I have to sometimes like, and we're going to stop now and look at nature, because that's what people do, you know? Like I have to do that. I mean, I can do bike rides because those are like, there's fun stuff to see, but for me, it's super triggering to do any thing where I'm not really going anywhere, but I'm moving. That's super dangerous. I can be, you know, I can do like a dance company. There are a lot of things I can do now, but I always have this thing of like, and if I don't feel like it today, I don't do it. And I don't get to beat myself up for not doing it. So.
Thank you. We have time for one final question.
The question is when I gave up the secrecy and the ritual surrounding the bulimia, you know, how did that feel? And it's funny the way you phrase the question, it felt, because that was a lot of the way that I dealt with my emotions. So I was snapping at people. I was getting angry a lot more. I was getting agitated a lot more. There was an outlet that I had that was gone. I did something similar happen when I quit smoking, you know, when I quit drinking for certain. Where I really didn't know how to deal with these emotions that I had been managing using that thing. And I guess, so that's the part A there. And I guess today, you know, and then I had to turn it in to focus it on something else. And so for me, I started like, I sort of treated this program like a diet for a while, where it was like, okay, I can only eat this much food. And today, it's a lot less about the diet. It's still a little bit there. But it's a lot more about God, you know. It's a lot more about asking God. When I sit down to a meal, you know, please let it be enough, you know. And, you know, all I have to do is ask for the help. I hope that my program gets a lot more spiritual and less food-based and more God-based as time goes on. That's what I forgot earlier, by the way, so I'm just trying to segue into it, not just very clumsily segue into that. But yeah, as far as the ritual, yeah, I felt a lot. And I had to channel... for some of those emotions I had to deal with in, you know, like four and working steps on it. And then some of those emotions, you know, I had to just channel into different areas. So, okay, thanks.
Thank you to Vita, who did a great job timing us, and to all of the for all who participated in this panel discussion. After the Serenity Prayer, would everyone please clear the room, as depending on the timing, there may be another panel discussion right behind us. Thank you for us allowing us to be of service. Everyone stands, and we'll say the Serenity Prayer.